Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast. This is an election year. Will Donald Trump be re-elected? What is going on with the Democrats? And has America gone even more crazy? We'll be discussing all of these things and more than once a week, because we don't feel you have enough Americano in your life. And I have a special offer for Americano listeners. If you want to subscribe to the Spectator's US edition, which is brilliant, by the way, I edit it, you can go to www.spectator.us/subscribe and take advantage of our special Americano offer. If you insert the code Americano in capital letters, like Donald Trump on Twitter, you will get 5% off. Please do so. I'm joined this morning by Bill Barnard, who is the author of Dixiecrats and Democrats and a political historian. Bill, Super Tuesday turned out to be a very good night indeed for Joe Biden. I don't think there's any other way of looking at it. Would you agree?
I don't think anyone had predicted or thought it was even possible that he would carry Massachusetts and Texas, for example, and be in the running in Maine as well, and sweeping the southern states. I think it was an absolute bolt from the blue that he did so extraordinarily well.
And I'm surprised by the... I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how the moderate lane, as people call it, needed to coalesce quickly in order to stop Sanders. Have you been surprised at the speed with which that's happened?
Not really. You know, most candidates, yes, there has to have a sizable ego to be involved in presidential politics, to be sure, but most candidates are fairly realistic and willing to make judgments that are in the best interest of not only themselves, but their campaigns and the country. And I think when it became clear that Klobuchar and Buttigieg, for example, had no clear way to victory, they did the thing which one would expect them to do. They did it perhaps a bit more quickly than one would expect, and I think the reason for that was that there was an urgency there because Super Tuesday was right after the South Carolina primary.
And I suppose that a more striking thing, perhaps even than the candidates, is the speed with which the voters seem to have hopped across to Biden. I mean, in Minnesota, I think he hasn't even appeared, and yet he carried the state.
Well, he didn't appear in Massachusetts either or spend any significant portion of money. He had no money to spend. I'm not sure it's so much of a surprise. In my view, the rise of Bloomberg, for example, his meteoric rise before the debate, was a tribute to two things. One, his great command of resources and thus his ability to command the airwaves. And secondly, the fact that most Democrats, or many Democrats anyway, were desperate to find someone who could beat Donald Trump. And many of them didn't think that Bernie Sanders could do that. They may have had other reservations about his policy positions or his ability to get things done, as evidenced by his career over the last 20 years in Congress. So I don't think it was all that surprising that when the signal was sent, in a sense, that this is the person who's going to be carrying that more moderate anti-Sanders banner, that they move very quickly.
Well, let's talk a bit about Bloomberg, because I suppose the interesting question is what happens to him now. I think he didn't have a disastrous night. I mean, if you consider that he's starting from scratch, as it were. But he didn't have a particularly good night either. And I mean,
no, he won delegates in American Samoa, and he's still above the threshold at the moment in Texas and in California, and so may well command delegates there. But it was not a good night. It certainly was not what he expected. The premise of his campaign was that Biden would prove to be so weak in the end that he would do poorly on Super Tuesday, and Bloomberg could come in and pick up the pieces. Well, that strategy just has not worked for him. So Bloomberg is a supremely rational human being, and I think he was genuinely in this, not for ego, though it does take some of that to be sure, but not so much for ego, but really because he felt that there needed to be someone to oppose Sanders and someone who could go on to beat Trump. And I think his campaign has already signaled that they're going to reassess after the results of yesterday, and he may very well choose to withdraw, or he may think that at least for the moment, it's better for him to stay in, because if, for example, in a state, given the complicated way we divide these delegates, a statewide basis and by congressional district, so long as he can stay in and get 15% in a state, he will basically be taking delegates away from Sanders rather than from Biden.
I saw Vanity Fair reported, I think yesterday, that After the South Carolina results, some of Bloomberg's aides were already pressuring him to step down, and he's so far resisted. From what you just said, it doesn't sound like you think hanging in there would be an act of selfishness in regards to the establishment.
Well, you have to look at the states that are coming up. And if you are certain that Biden will be above the threshold in all of them, as I think from now one can assume, then the presence of Bloomberg there doesn't necessarily detract from taking delegates away from Sanders. But I think the more likely thing is that he would assume that his votes would mostly go to Biden, and he would indeed decide to suspend his campaign.
And do you think this speed with which the race seems to have sort of shaped up so well for Biden has meant that people are quickly forgetting the glaring flaws that seemed very obvious a couple of weeks ago in his candidacy? I mean, one doesn't want to be uncharitable, but he doesn't seem to have a very firm grasp of facts, details, language. I know he has a speech impediment, but the signs are a bit more ominous than just a stammer, I would say.
Well, I think that momentarily, at least, certainly in the glow of the victory, there's probably less of an awareness, at least immediately, of the kinds of attacks that he will face from Sanders, but more particularly from Trump, were he to be the nominee in the end. And there are problems there, but most of them are known. Most of them have been known. And there is a kind of statute of limitations involved with politicians. That once something has been known and people have absorbed it, they're no longer fascinated by it, and they tend to overlook that. I think that was true, for example, in some of the earlier races that Biden ran when he was chosen as vice president, when the issue of plagiarism came up again. Well, he didn't say anything that was untrue in that interview where he pointed out that he was the first of his family to go to college and all the rest. But there was a remarkable similarity to the way the story had been told by a British politician. But I think most people, they know Joe Biden. He's a known quantity to them. And they know his faults, and they know some of his, and they're reassured by some of his strengths. So I don't think it necessarily will be all that detrimental necessarily, but they will very much reappear, those issues and those charges, in a general campaign against Trump, who has never shown any hesitancy to use even the most outlandish of charges.
Let me try my perhaps rather eccentric theory on you, that Americans, in their great kindness, rather like doddery candidates. I mean, Reagan in his second term was famously pretty much gaga for a lot of it. Trump is not across the details by any stretch of the imagination, but he's very popular. And then Bloomberg and Sanders, I would say, are not exactly on the ball, but they seem to be able to win votes. And then, of course, Biden, you know, part of his appeal is that he's kind of a plonker.
He's Uncle Joe.
He's Uncle Joe, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting notion. On the other hand, the Democratic Party typically has been one that sought out new leaders, people who seem to be rooted in the future rather than the past. But they do seem to be reassured, certainly, by Joe Biden. And maybe it is after the uncertain times that we've been living through and the great turmoil and toxicity that we've seen in American politics, maybe people do seek some reassurance. And that the old ways, going back to an older way of looking at things and dealing with people, might be advisable. On the other hand, while Biden gives that kind of reassurance and the return of return of civility to American politics and to a more normal way of conducting business, on the other hand, he has to enunciate a forward-looking policy if he's going to capture the people that he needs to add to the coalition that he's building. I think that's true, for example, with the Hispanic community. I think that's true with the young, where he's had some weakness, although they have not turned out in the numbers and to the degree that Sanders certainly hoped that they would. So I think that there is a challenge facing Biden as well, and that is to articulate a forward-looking program that people can be drawn to. It's not enough simply to list the various and sundry things that you would do, much as that is needed and much as he is doing and did in his speech last night. But he still has to articulate this larger vision of what his presidency would mean to the American people.
And if we take personalities out of it, it's starting to look now a bit like 2020 will be a repeat of 2016, in that you have Sanders, the insurgent, threatening the Democratic establishment, but the Democratic establishment finds a way to survive. And the candidate who wins the nomination, promises a sort of continuation of Obama-era politics, let's call it, and then ultimately has to face Trump. And if it's a repeat of 2016 again, that would mean that Trump would win.
Well,
do you think I'm
onto
something there?
I think your analysis is accurate in that it is reminiscent. That is, the insurgent candidate, and then perhaps some bitterness if he fails to get it, and the reluctance of his supporters then to move in support of the nominee. On the other hand, the one thing that does unite Democrats across the board is their negative feelings toward Donald Trump and their desire to defeat him and deny him a second term. So I think that in a way, too, Biden does not suffer as Hillary Clinton did from a personal animus that a number of voters had towards her. That's not true with Biden. Biden generally has very favorable ratings, especially among Democrats, and he's been around, people know him, they're comfortable with him, he's a reassuring person. So I don't think necessarily that you will find that group of people peeling off as they did in 2016, at least to the extent that they did.
And one group of Americans that seems incredibly enthusiastic about Biden are African Americans, who yesterday we saw amazing numbers in some states coming out to support Biden. What do you think explains his appeal to African Americans? I think it's something that's quite hard for British people in particular to understand.
Well, he has long been a presence in from his role on the Judiciary Committee in the debates over civil rights. He is not a Johnny-come-lately to that issue. And he has long as well paid close attention, especially to Democratic parties in the South, which have a significant number of black members, and in fact a majority in South Carolina. So he's long been a presence there. He's long been known. He's long gone on speaking in the South to black groups as well as to other groups. And so he's a known quantity, and he's been by their side time and time again on various issues. The problem that he faces at this point is that he needs to begin to garner some of that same kind of support from the Hispanic community.
Interesting. Which so far seems to be going towards Sanders.
Well, that's right, but it shows how movement can occur. Sanders got very little support in the Hispanic community in 2016, but he has spent the last 4 years cultivating that community and reaching out and developing relationships, and that has come home to his benefit in the votes in California and Texas in particular last night. So Biden faces a challenge in replicating that, and has to do it very, very quickly if he can. And there are some elements in his background that would be helpful, his work on comprehensive immigration reform, for example. But it's a challenge that he faces and a task he has to turn to.
And Sanders is by no means beaten, and he's going to keep fighting for a while longer. If that fight gets, as hinted in both their speeches last night, that fight could get quite unpleasant, and Sanders could go after Biden on things that really could hurt him with the Democratic base, his support for the Iraq war, his lobbying on behalf of credit card companies. It's interesting with African-American voters, too, because he has quite a controversial record on criminal justice reform, doesn't he?
Well, you're talking about the crime bill that passed, and he was instrumental in helping to pass. In retrospect, that has become rather an issue of some magnitude. On the other hand, at the time when it passed, it was supported by the black community and by the black congressional caucus and all the rest. So it's hard, in a sense, if you can have time to explain the issue, to see that that would necessarily hurt him all that much.
But you don't think on those other issues that Biden is, aside from his mental abilities, on those other issues, Biden is a flawed candidate to be representing the emerging left?
He is a flawed candidate, to be sure. All candidates are flawed in one way or another. On the other hand, if in fact it does become a campaign of great vitriol and all the rest, in one sense, that will hurt Sanders, because with suburban whites in particular, and suburban women in particular, that kind of campaigning does not wear well. If Sanders makes repeatedly the same points that he's made over a long period of time, it's not necessarily going to be all that convincing, I think, to many suburban voters. And that's where Biden's great strength already is.
Yes, because he's making quite a play of saying that he wants to bring back civility and decency into politics.
Indeed. And Sanders has some problems in particular states as well that are upcoming. Michigan, for example, he has proposed, although there's been very little conversation about it, he's proposed that the United States ban the sale of any of petrol cars or cars that use any kind of fossil fuel. And I don't know how that's going to sit with the Ford and the other workers in Michigan in particular, who may not be able to think that that change can be made quite so quickly and that their future might be impacted.
And another interesting area where Sanders seems to be failing is on healthcare, because it was thought that Medicare for All was a kind of winning position in 2020. But what we might have seen yesterday is that quite a lot of Democrat voters are keen to keep Obamacare and are worried about what might replace it.
I think that's true. And it's a comment on the kind of insistence on consistency that Sanders has, that he's been able to not merely endorse the principle of universal health care, which all the Democratic candidates endorse, but insist that there's only one way to get it. And the notion that you take away the private insurance at this point of 160 million Americans has not sold very well. Medicare for All is a good bumper sticker, and it sounds good, and people believe it because they like Medicare. But the position that Biden took and that Buttigieg took, which is Medicare for All who want it, and which will put the country on a glide path to a single-payer system, but nonetheless not force the kind of immediate overhaul and upheaval that the Sanders proposal would entail. And I think that's evidence of the kind of ideological rigidity that has hurt Sanders and that will continue to hurt him, particularly on that issue. And particularly with many unionized workers who have health care programs that have been negotiated by their unions and that are very good, and they are reluctant to see any change in those programs.
Bill, it's all incredibly fascinating. Thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you'll come on again before the Democratic race is finished. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Americano. And I'd like to encourage you all to give us your feedback, positive comments or constructive comments only, please, to podcast@spectator.co.uk and say anything you like there as long as it's reasonably polite.